It is the Ringer NFL Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Kevin Clark. Great show today. We start by reacting to the big trade, Matthew Stafford to the Rams, Jared Goff to the Lions. Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Noah Princiati join me. And then we talk about the Super Bowl and give our first impressions of the matchup between the Chiefs and the Bucks. What to look for as we plant our flag for the week ahead, where we're going to have a bunch of great pods on this feed.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/RingerNFL. Just go to Indeed.com/RingerNFL right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It is the Ringer NFL Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Kevin Clark. The Robinhood app couldn't stop this risky trade. Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, Noah Princiati are here to break down. Matthew Stafford to the Rams, Jared Goff to the Lions. Two first-round picks going to Detroit. Jared Goff's contract going to Detroit. A third rounder is also going to Detroit. This is one of the biggest trades in years. There's a lot to discuss. What's going on, guys?
Working on my gamma short squeezes.
That Robinhood joke.
Short squeeze? Well, I was just saying, I was thinking about that, or the fact that if these hedge fund managers wanted to get out of these bad positions, they could just attach a first round pick, because no one thought that you could get out of Jared Goff's contract and look at where we are now. All right, we're going to start big picture.
Shorting GameStop is signing Jared Goff.
Absolutely. And again, just like the Jared Goff deal, everything made sense at the time, but sometimes you change with the information. All right, there's a lot to get to, and I think this is one of those trades that says a lot about both teams. It says a lot about the league in general. It says maybe something about Deshaun Watson and that market, and just the quarterback market in general, which we'll get to a little bit later in the show. But I want to start with you, Nora. When you heard about this trade, you thought what?
I thought that the Rams just continually go for it, right? Like, this is so on brand for them, and they've been doing this dance with Goff for most of the season, where it seems pretty clear that if you gave Sean McVay true serum and effectively being in a do or die moment with this trade is the equivalent of doing that, it seems like he felt that Goff was indeed holding them back and limiting their ceiling. And we know that, I think we can say pretty safely that the Rams value first round picks less than basically any other team in the league. I believe they
less than anything in the world. I think that they would throw first round picks in the trash can if they weren't able to get rid of them.
Like, they look at a first round pick and they just laugh. They laugh at it. And so I think they will be going from 2016, when Goff was their pick, to 2024 without making a first round pick unless they trade back up. So
that's the Trump administration and the Biden administration.
Yep. Yep.
That's it.
That's
just crazy.
They're going to go 7 straight years with that one. It is absolutely wild, their ability to swing for the fences and find ways to go all in, even if you think they're already all in. I mean, like, that's the funny thing about the Rams in general. I'm going to get to this, but when I think about the fact that 3 years ago we were saying, wow, they're all in, it's boom or bust, it's make or break. And then they're just like, we'll just keep doing that.
They are perpetually all in.
Yes, they are. It is actually argues against the fact they've ever been all in. It's just they're all in all the time. Danny Heifetz, talk radio question. Who won the trade, or did both teams win it?
Everyone won the trade. I mean, Matt Stafford won the trade. Matt Stafford doesn't play for Detroit anymore. The Lions won the trade because they had 12 offers or whatever and took this one. So obviously it was the best one. The Rams won the trade because I don't care about the money and other stuff, the picks, whatever. I get it. They have a better quarterback. It's the most important position in sports. The quarterback's better. They won the trade. The only person who lost here, you could argue, is Jared Goff. I don't care. He's getting $100 billion. He's not a loser here. Like, this is just a win for everyone.
Well, Don Draper, that's what the money's for.
Yeah,
situation.
Precisely.
Danny Kelly, scheme wise. Okay, let's just focus. I don't want to focus on Dan Campbell, Anthony Lynn, and Jared Goff here. I think we can put that aside here for a second. We know where that franchise is going the next couple of years. Okay. Matthew Stafford and McVay's offense is the big thing here, because the only way the Rams can get to the Super Bowl and the real Super Bowl contention, and this is why they made the trade, is a vast improvement at quarterback. We know Stafford is at least capable of that. McVay identified Stafford as the guy he wanted, if you listen to Peter Schrager and some of these other reporters. So I guess the big picture question now is, how does he work in that scheme? And is it going to be effective enough to get them with that roster, with the stars and scrubs strategy? You guys are on the fantasy pod. You understand it. Is it going to be effective enough for them to get into real Super Bowl contention? And what keys are there in that offense?
So to me, the big thing is the vertical game, which completely left the Rams offense, especially down the stretch this last season. I mean, if you look at one of Jared Goff's scatter charts, you know, the next gen stats do the scatter charts where all the passes are. There was one game towards the end of the season, I can't remember off the top of my head which one it was, but it was literally nothing was like past 5 yards downfield. It was all, they were scheming, McVay was scheming up everything just to get the ball out of his hands. They did not trust him to do anything whatsoever down the field. And so to me, that's the big thing. And in the heyday, when Goff and McVay were working well together in 2017, 2018, what made that defense so, or what that made that offense so dangerous, is you had to defend every like inch of the field. They could go horizontal really, really well, but they could also push the ball deep really well. It just made things very, very difficult. You had that balance where you're able to run the wide zone game, then throw off play action down the field. If you look at some of the stats, and I pulled up a few stats from PFF, deep passing 20 plus yards last season, Stafford had 13 touchdowns to 6 picks. Goff had 4 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. So obviously, Goff, his vertical passing had just fallen off a cliff. Yeah. Matt Stafford, 2019 and 2020, he averaged 10.7 yards per average depth of target, which is second among quarterbacks. So he is, even on these bad teams with the Lions, like a vertical, aggressive downfield thrower. Jared Goff, average depth of target in the same time span, was 7.5 yards, which is 29th out of 32. So what you're getting, what the Rams are getting in Stafford, is someone who will push the ball downfield. I think that's going to really open up not only their deep passing game, their play action deep passing game, but also open up their run game. Because I think at his heart, in his heart, like, McVay wants to run the ball. And if you get, like, if all you can do is these screens and like 5 yard passes, that really hinders your ability, because defenses just come down. They don't respect, you know, the deep pass anymore. So I think Stafford has the ability to unlock that part of the offense. And I think that's why Goff and McVay fell out so fast, so quickly. It's just, he couldn't do the vertical element of the offense, even the intermediate part of the offense. I saw this from Sharp Football Stats. Stafford ranked first in EPA on intermediate throws. 11 to 19 air yards last year. Goff was 22nd. Mm-hmm. So that's a big difference, both short or both intermediate and deep.
And you could hear it from McVay too over the course of the season, because he's usually pretty good at keeping all of that stuff under wraps. There are a few moments where some of his frustration seemed to creep to the surface. And I think the two things were so Goff has had 38 turnovers in 31 games. That seems to really be rubbing McVay the wrong way. And then the other thing was the inability to call and to design longer developing plays. They'd lost that explosive component of their offense. And I think having a quarterback like Stafford, as Danny just did such a good job explaining, replacing Goff with someone who is better down the field, hopefully opens all of that up. Now, that's obviously the gamble that they're making, is that not only will that happen, it'll happen to an extent that they could potentially make up for some variance, some regression on their defense, and extend this potential Super Bowl window. Because I think probably they're looking at this year's team and saying, okay, if we have Jared Goff playing quarterback here and we can't force opponents to defend, you know, every blade of grass, then this is kind of our ceiling. And I think there's a lot of logic in that, but part of the value judgment that they're making when they trade away the first round picks that they still have to trade away is that those are going to be, you know, picks in the 20s. And I would guess that they're right in that. The only thing is, it's really risky, because if they're not, then all of a sudden the value that they're giving up is a lot more significant. Like, I think one of the reasons that they've been so, you know, seemed so willing to part with those first round picks is because I bet they look at them and they think, okay, a low first or a high second, we're a pretty stable franchise. We've got a pretty good coaching infrastructure. We can develop those guys and get fairly similar value out of them. That changes when you're talking about like top half of the first round selections.
Yeah.
So if they are right about how possible it is for them to keep the window open, then probably they get what they want out of this. And they end up feeling like, you know what, this is just how we do things. And that was what it took, not just to get the player, but to get the contract. And they still, I think it's 20-ish million in dead money that they're going to have to deal with. So it's not like they get out of Goff's contract 100% scot-free, but so much of how this ends up being viewed a couple of years down the line has to do with whether or not they are judging their window appropriately, I think.
Well, it's interesting to me because, first of all, as you said, the dead cap charge, it's around 22, and that with Brandon Cooks are two of the biggest charges in NFL history for dead cap. So they're obviously, again, not only are they laughing in the face of first round picks, they're laughing in the face of the salary cap. And Les Snead and I, we've talked about this a handful of times, where basically like they make football decisions first and salary cap decisions second. And Les Snead has said that, has told me, you know, there were times where he remembers, oh, we got to get rid of this guy because of the money. And now it's, we got to get rid of this guy because of some quote unquote football strategic decision. And then the money can be worked out, right? The cap can be an illusion, even in a year where that's not supposed to be true. Like it is, it's just always going to be true. And it's interesting, Nora, you said that they want to extend the Super Bowl window. I actually think that they didn't have a Super Bowl window until today or last night, right? Like, I actually think that they, if you looked at this Rams team this year, did you see a Super Bowl team? Because I certainly didn't. And
well,
now
no, that,
I think
that's
this
what
is
I'm
a pathway.
I
know what you mean. I know.
They look at this year's team and think, you know what, we milked pretty much as much as was there out of this.
Yeah. They've opened a window. They've opened a window. And obviously, if you look at Goff, who essentially was not much better than Wolford at the end of this thing, or if you listen to some reporters, maybe even a little bit worse. I mean, Jason Lockenford basically said this was a salary dump because Wolford had outplayed Goff. I just think that this is something they had to do. I know that taking a big swing like this seems like it's aggressive, but it's not. I mean, it's like the next step. It's the only path forward for them to win a Super Bowl with their current roster construction. They're not going to get a ton of draft capital. They're not going to get a ton of cap space. So this was the only thing they can do. I talked to Kevin Demoff about this at the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and he basically said, listen, there's this fascination with either tanking or accumulating all this draft capital or accumulating all this cap space or whatever. And what there isn't, and it's one thing they want to do, is they want to raise their hand and say, hey, this is happening faster than we thought. We're just going to deal with this window. And I think them, I know this is, they take life a quarter mile at a time. Okay. Like that's what the Rams do. Yes. That's their organizational philosophy. And I don't think they're going to back off it. And I think that the more they've done this, the more they've traded for Jalen Ramsey, the more they've paid Aaron Donald a lot of money. They gave Goff that contract, which we can talk about in a second, but they have to be, the only way for them to keep going is to shoot their way
life
out.
In
okay.
The fast
they've got
lane.
This roster, life in the fast lane. They've got this roster. This is the only way they're going to be able to do it.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/RingerNFL. Just go to Indeed.com/RingerNFL right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Nora, I want to ask you, do you think that the rest of this offseason now changes with the quarterback market or anything like that because of what we saw last night? Is there anybody now, would you say now maybe quarterbacks are going to go for a little pricier than you thought? Do you think that there's, you know, I think there was a report a couple of days ago that maybe 18 quarterbacks are going to change cities this year. This kicking off the quarterback market says what to you?
Well, it says that that whole process is now underway, right? Like, I think there was some question as to whether the first domino was going to be Stafford or potentially if somebody really wanted to take a huge initial swing at Deshaun Watson, who now seems like his situation is going to be a little bit more entrenched and take a longer time, but just because he's the highest quality potentially available starter out there, you kind of wonder, okay, which one of these guys is going to change hands first? I think now we know that Stafford, because of the combination of his talent level and also just clarity on the fact that he was available, that was obviously the first domino, and now everything goes from there. And I do think that, okay, take a team like Indianapolis that might have been in the running for Stafford. They may, because their options have now gone down by one, maybe this gives them a little bit more clarity if they want to say go after Carson Wentz and at least, you know, take a flyer there. Whatever.
This podcast just got very dark. The Indianapolis Colts just went from maybe we'll get Matthew Stafford to maybe we'll get Carson Wentz in about 5 seconds, and it's not good. Think of the Colts fans.
But if you have a clear-eyed assessment of your situation and know that, okay, they have a they have a list somewhere and there's a big gap between those guys. But if Frank Reich feels like our next best option, if we didn't get Stafford, is I want to see if I can make something work with Carson Wentz again, then you move on. And that's how this stuff starts to happen in quick succession and quick succession and quick succession. I do want to point out, just because we just had this conversation about the Rams living life in the fast lane, the Lions in some ways are kind of doing the opposite, right? Because the thing is, and I hope this, I hope people sort of recalibrate how they feel about the Goff contract, which has been viewed as such an albatross for so long. And it was for LA, obviously, which is why they had to price into the trade package, taking on that money. However, essentially what the Lions are on the hook for with him, it's a 4-year deal worth $27 million a year. The first 2 years are guaranteed. But since LA is covering the dead money, 27 is a lot. Jared Goff would not get that on the open market right now. Teddy Bridgewater got 21. Like, it's not, quarterbacks are just expensive. So I don't think that this by any means stops them from looking to draft a quarterback high in the first round this year. I think they have pick number 7, or in a slightly later round, and they say, okay, let's see if we can either just use Goff as a bridge or try to have some sort of reclamation project going on and see if they can up his potential a little bit. Obviously, Brad Holmes was heavily involved in drafting him when he was the Rams director of college scouting in LA when they chose Goff. So he probably thinks pretty highly of him. But in terms of that build being fairly slow, I think this is an indication for Detroit that they could do this and still take multiple swings at that position. They don't, this does not mean that they have to be like, Jared Goff is our future. So I think we're all in on Goff.
Every franchise is going to take, in the future, every franchise is like 15 minutes where they're all in on Jared Goff. He'll just get passed around. So the Rams will inherit 2 years, $43 million remaining on Stafford's contract, which is extremely manageable, especially for a player like Matthew Stafford. Before we get to the bigger implications here, Danny Heifetz, I want to stick on the Rams here. Where do they rank right now for Super Bowl contenders? So Dan Orlovsky comes out. And by the way, Orlovsky, in my piece a couple of years ago, when I did a profile on Stafford, one of his hypotheticals was he's like, you know, I think Stafford's gotten the life sucked out of him a little bit. I think that sort of his arm, he still has the capability to make those throws where no one else can make it. But what would happen if he had a Sean McVay or a Sean Payton? And I threw that out there on Twitter last night, that little quote that he gave me, because I think that Stafford is kind of on the short list of guys who was always a what if guy. You know, what if he had a Sean McVay? McVay, and now he gets it. So Orlovsky comes out today and says that the Rams are his Super Bowl favorites. I wouldn't go that far. But if you're talking about pecking order for 2021, especially in the NFC, Danny Heifetz, where do you go?
I think they're really high. I Super Bowl favorites is maybe that's what happens when you go to first take too much. I really love Dan Orlovsky, but
whoa!
I think no, I, he's great. Wow. That's not what I'm saying. But I like your point about Stafford being no, I like your point about Stafford being in the right offense. Because here's the deal: Jared Goff didn't make Sean McVay's life easier. That's what the money's for. That's what the big contract's for. Stafford will make Sean McVay's life easier. Sean McVay will make Matt Stafford's life easier. That's We can go in X's and O's and schemes and all this stuff. At the end of the day, that's the job. So I think, as DK was mentioning with the schemes, it'll be fun to see Stafford throwing downfield, hitting all these things, knowing what to do. Because Goff, you know, he went first overall. He's got some tools. But the reality is he wasn't mobile. He's not a creative player. When Sean McVay's scheme failed, Jared Goff wasn't there to be like, hey, we could do this. Oh, he just ad-libbed. He's not doing what Mahomes does. He's not doing what Deshaun Watson does. He's not doing what Stafford has done for 10 years, which is, oh, everything went to hell. Okay, I made a play anyway. Jared Goff does not and has never done that. Stafford will do that. And when the Rams offense has that, I think it'll be really good. And I think Les Snead, the Rams GM, as you were talking about, Kevin, deserves a lot of credit here. He's kind of a swashbuckling guy. I mean, he clearly doesn't value first rounders like everything else. We said Goff's contract was getting shorted. Les Snead's actually kind of shorting first round picks, right? He's just looking at a different chart than everyone else. So I don't think it affects the quarterback market. I don't think it changes any of these other guys. I think the Rams just look at the market completely differently than every other team and what they're willing to give up. But that's also one of the reasons I think they're a Super Bowl contender, because any hole they have on their roster this season, they'll make the trade. I don't know if you allow cursing on the show, but they don't give a whatever.
A hoot.
They don't give a hoot.
I believe we do.
You
allow
have a child, so you know all those little.
Hey, when it's warranted.
It wasn't warranted. DK has a little son, so he knows how to not curse now.
They do just so that we're operating within the bounds of reality here. They need a deep threat receiver. It's not just that it is primarily the quarterback in terms of why they lost a lot of their explosive playability, but like I really hate that I'm about to tie this to the post Brandon Cooks era in Los Angeles, but they could use a receiver that can stretch the field too.
Yeah, you can get one of those though. That's easier than getting Stafford.
Look, swashbuckling Les Snead is probably going to go out and do it. And if it takes 6 first round picks, then, you know, that's just the price of doing business if you're swashbuckling Les Snead. I just don't want to paint Matthew Stafford is a very good quarterback, but I don't want to paint him as like savior fixer of every single problem.
Yeah, but Kevin, I'm curious. Well, first of all, that's a good point. But the thing I'm wondering here, and Kevin, I'm curious what you think. What do you make of the Rams giving up 7 consecutive first round picks? Like, do you think that, here's the thing. They're either, there's 1,000 ways to skin a cat, or is someone right? Yeah. And some, like, are the Rams, what are the odds that they're right and the other 31 teams are, other than maybe the Patriots, are all wrong and that first rounders are overrated?
So there's a couple things here. Number one is that most of these, especially in the past 3 years, most of them have been low first round picks. The last 3 years have been 23, 31, and 20. Okay. The Patriots have made a cottage industry of trading back, as you said, and maximizing second, third round picks because they understand what that's where the value is. I think that I've talked to the front office there a lot about inefficiencies in the market in Los Angeles, not in New England. The New England front office is less chatty.
You don't text Bill Belichick?
I think everyone here knows. No, at different events and training camps and all that stuff, I've talked to those guys. And they look for inefficiencies in the market just like everybody else. And I remember talking to I think it was Kevin Demoff about Robert Woods. And I said, you know, what did you look for in Woods? Because I did not think Robert Woods was anything special when he came to LA. And I said, look, I mean, like, The big thing right now is look at supporting cast and really dig in and find out that Robert Woods played really well when he had good service, but he was just playing with a bunch of bad quarterbacks, and that there are hidden gems. Because I came from it at that point in that conversation is saying, like, you know, it's really hard to find an inefficiency or a hidden gem in the NFL where there's just a lot of smart people doing a lot of smart things. And the idea that the Eric DaCosta or Brett Veach or Brandon Bean aren't on something is, you know, it takes a lot of work in order to beat those guys. And I think that there are 5, 6, 7 front offices where they're really good at figuring out where to to hit in the inefficiency market. And one of those guys, one of those ways is to trade first round picks for elite talent, because you're not going to get at pick 31, pick 20, pick 23, you're not going to get an elite player. And you do, in a lot of cases, have to pay up for those guys. Jalen Ramsey's really expensive. Matthew Stafford, relative to a first round pick, is really expensive, but you're going to get better players. So I understand why you do it. It's an inefficiency on a team that looks for inefficiencies. And that's the long and the short of it. I mean, like, this is a forward thinking organization. I remember talking to Lestine a couple of years ago, and they were giving the rookies tests about how to teach millennials, right? Because they couldn't get through to them. And now every team does that. So they don't, they gave them like aptitude tests to figure out how to, they should teach them. It was wild. Anyway, they're just a forward thinking organization. And whether it's, you know, figuring out that Robert Woods was going to be good because he was playing with bad quarterbacks, or figuring out that Jalen Ramsey's worth 2 first round picks, they're going to think about this stuff. They're not a perfect organization. They gave Todd Gurley way too much money. They gave, obviously, in hindsight, Jared Goff way too much money. This is not a perfect organization. If they did, they win the Super Bowl every year. But what I will say is they make more good decisions than bad. And you can't say that about most NFL organizations.
Just to piggyback on that, some of this stuff is really complicated and some of it's really simple, right? Like, low first round picks, being willing to part with them, you can exploit a little inefficiency by doing that. For the simple reason that a first round pick sounds more valuable than a second round pick. Is pick 32 really that much more valuable than pick 33? No, it's not. But it sounds cooler because it's in the first round. And that sounds like the most reductive, basic, dumb thing that everybody should have gotten over. Guess what? They haven't. If you say just anybody, that's how the human brain works. You say that there are 2 first round picks and it just sounds like a buttload of money. Or of value.
A haul. Everybody, that was the instant reaction last night. Everybody was like, that is a haul of picks for Matthew Stafford. Like, first of all, they do attach first round pick to get rid of Goff's contract. Whatever. Anyway, I do think that, but I also think that there's a bet that is being made that has happened in the past. It's happening with the Texans right now, that at some point things go south and all of a sudden you're not picking 30th or 32nd or 28th. You're picking third. I mean, damn, look at the Boston Celtics in a similar situation there, where the trades don't work out. And all of a sudden in 2023, you're picking second overall, first overall. Happens probably half the time in these situations, that the pick ends up being way better than we thought. I do want to pick your brain, Nora, on the report. Tom Curran had it a couple of minutes ago that Matt Stafford said he would play for any team except the Patriots. I guess the suggestion there is he did not want to do another Matt Patricia era. Matt Patricia's rejoining the staff. What do you think about that? And is it justified? And does it say anything broader about the Patriots other than he just didn't want to be with Matt Patricia anymore?
So, 2 things. Matt Stafford played at Georgia, plays indoors. Apparently part of it also not thrilled about the weather in New England, whatever. I think that's probably fair. I also think that quarterbacks who don't like snow are big giant babies and should get over it. That's just my personal opinion.
I don't like snow.
I think you're a big giant baby and should get over it. We're going to get
that part
a foot
true.
Of snow in Boston on Monday. And I, for one, am incredibly excited because it'll turn my neighborhood into a winter wonderland. But again, neither here nor there.
It's 71 degrees here in beautiful St. Augustine, Florida. Be curious.
No one asked. In terms of the Matt Patricia 2.0 era being off to just a rollicking great start, yeah, man, that's tough cookies. I can't really say that I blame Matthew Stafford. It didn't seem like that was a fun few years. So I sort of doubt that his presence is going to, in the long term, be a hugely significant factor for free agents writ large. But you also have to remember that there are 2 free agent receivers in Detroit, Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay, who have been routinely tied to the Patriots for trades or whatever for years at different points. And it might just be that for this one off season, there are a few guys who are going to look at the Patriots and go, oof, God, that guy was not fun to play for. I kind of don't want to do this again. I do think, though, that while that's fun to joke about and think about, the reason that players don't want to come to New England right now is because the roster is not very good. It's not like it's not Matt Patricia. It's like a little bit Matt Patricia, but it's not entirely Matt Patricia.
Also, nobody wants to replace Tom Brady.
Well, technically, they're replacing Cam Newton.
Cam Newton.
stinks.
Yeah, but oh, let's be real here. He's not replacing Cam Newton. It's still Stafford replacing Brady.
Yeah, but you can't. But how long does that go for? Like, can we
indefinitely?
He's not replacing. He's literally not replacing Tom Brady. I will say that I think that this is just a tough break for the Patriots. And so much, like, I don't think Matt Patricia is going to keep a bunch of people away. I think he's just going to keep Matt Stafford away. And the fact that he was available, if the Patriots were going to part with the,
I think he also might keep Marvin Jones away.
Okay. Well,
that's fine.
Listen, I wouldn't want Matt Patricia on my staff, just kind of a general, but I think that they know what he brings. You know, just let him do whatever he's good at and things will be fine.
He brought their research guy, the
Patriots anyway.
Evan Rothstein.
There we go. Already making waves. All right, Nora's got to go. On the other side of this break, the Danny's return. We're going to talk a little bit more about what this trade means, and then we're going to talk Super Bowl. All right, Danny Kelly, let's briefly get into the Lions part of this, because they're stripping this thing down to parts. That's pretty obvious. Dan Campbell is and Brad Holmes are going to take a longer view on this. When you look at that roster and you look at Goff and you look at everything, can you just kind of sketch out a path forward for this franchise?
I mean, yeah, I think it you can look at Goff as probably like a bridge quarterback. If he works out and if he turns back into the guy that he was a few years ago, then that's like a huge bonus. But to me, they're getting these first round picks. It helps them build the foundation for what they want to do. This is a sort of a clean break / clean slate. They can just kind of start, you know, building the roster how they want to build it without having to worry about, like, you know, making Stafford happy, giving them a winner right away. Goff has already talked about how he's just happy to be somewhere where he's wanted and accepted or whatever. Like, it's just kind of depressing to see that tweet happen today, by the way. But yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely at a turning point. A lot of their veteran guys, a lot of their older veteran guys are free agents. And so I think this is a good time, you know, for them not only to just get younger, continue to rebuild the foundation, but to just break away from, I guess, like, you know, the Stafford era.
Yeah, no, it's the Stafford era was an interesting one, because I think that Matthew Stafford is, you know, again, we'll go back to the what if thing. I think there's so many different ways where we're thinking about Matthew Stafford having played in a Super Bowl, certainly winning playoff games, being in NFC title games or whatever. And I think that could have happened with it, you know, going to Dallas, 6 years ago and losing on a strange referee pass interference judgment call. There could have been a pathway there. Orlovsky says they had the Packers number that year. They probably could have made the Super Bowl, whatever. That's a different conversation. But I guess, Danny Kelly, the question I have right now is, if you're to rank quarterbacks, Matthew Stafford is where for you right now in 2021?
In the entire NFL?
Yes.
I think that's a good question. Probably somewhere around like 12, 13. Like, he's not necessarily an elite quarterback, at least in this point of his career. I think he could in this new scheme, in the Rams scheme. It wouldn't surprise me if he had like a really good season in 2021. But I think there's enough evidence in his career that he's maybe not like the guy that everyone kind of expected him to be coming out of college, but he's still a very good quarterback, put it that way. There's shades of gray there. And so I would say, yeah, somewhere probably like top 12-ish. And I think he could certainly still rise. He's only 32 years old, I believe. So it's not like he's necessarily getting near retirement or anything like that. I think he's still got a few good, solid years of his prime left over, or at least maybe not his prime. But I mean, we saw what Aaron Rodgers was able to do this year, and Tom Brady's going into his 43rd year. So I think he's still got plenty of good football in him. And in the scheme, who knows, maybe like he turns into a top five guy.
Danny Heifetz, future of quarterback contracts. You know, I saw Bill Barnwell make this point. I thought it was great. And you essentially, and by the way, Barnwell was on this from the very beginning. He basically said that, made the case that the Rams should just cycle through quarterbacks, never give the big money. But now you look at huge extensions going forward for quarterbacks like Jared Goff. I'm not talking about Patrick Mahomes. I'm not talking about Deshaun Watson. I'm talking about the middle tier and what that looks like. Do you think that there's going to be a return to, you know, in the middle? I think Andy Dalton had that contract that was, you know, kind of mid-market for a quarterback, and then a couple of years later, anyone who was playing like Andy Dalton was getting significantly more than that. Do you think that this Goff and Wentz kind of nightmare that these teams, both these teams are going through, is going to say anything about how quarterbacks pay in the future, or is that just the cost of doing business now?
No, it has to change something, right? I mean, we're talking about, we just saw the first and the second pick in the draft play pretty well early, sign massive deals, and then just not be who the teams thought they were. Now, the Eagles had to fire a coach and bring in a coach basically to fix Carson Wentz, which is an unbelievable thing for the second pick. The Rams, you know, just got rid of Goff after they extended him. And both those teams traded up to get those guys. I mean, so as Barnwell pointed out, does it make logical sense for you, like, oh, yeah, we have this quarterback on this cheap rookie contract, and then we'll give it up, and then we'll get another one, and we'll find someone cheaper? That makes sense, but the reality is that these are relationships, right? It's kind of like dating someone. It's like when you're with someone, you know, the one, you know. It's like the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, there's no hesitation. But the middle tier of quarterbacks, it's so hard because you want to talk yourself into this person, like, yeah, they're the right person. But in reality, it's really hard to be like, oh, yeah, there's other fish in the sea. It's hard for these teams to be like, oh, yeah, we'll just find another quarterback. It's scary to take the leap and break up and be like, oh, no, will we just be alone forever? You know, it's easier said than done. But I think that the Rams had the courage. And I think that's the word. Like, I think the Rams deserve some credit here for being like, yeah, screw it. We made two huge mistakes. Like, well, I don't know if they would say drafting Goff was a mistake, but they obviously just said that signing him to the extension was a huge mistake. And they kind of got matching tattoos here. It's like Les Snead, Sean McVay, and Jared Goff all signed these extensions together, like in the same summer. It's like you go get matching tattoos, and it's like, oh, like it takes a lot of courage to be like, yeah, you know what? That tattoo was a stupid idea. I wish I didn't have it.
What I will say about the extension is that obviously it was a mistake, and that's why you have to attach a first-round pick to get rid of it. What I will say is, first of all, no one has ever successfully in the cap era just moved on from a quarterback and without a plan in place to replace them and then thrived after that. Like, it's never happened. And there are so many, I'll tell you, there are a handful of teams where scouts, you know, this is all third hand, have told me that, oh, you know, we're gonna draft this quarterback and then we're not gonna sign him to an extension. We're gonna draft another quarterback, right? People have told me that, I'm not talking about decision makers, but I'm saying there are people who've been associated with teams where the rumor is always they're gonna try that strategy. And then in year three, the player is really good. And guess what they do? They give him a boatload of money. They are year four, or they extend the fifth year option or whatever it is. Teams talk about it and don't do it because it is such a bold thing to do.
And if you screw up, you get fired.
Fired. Going into the draft of free agency to find a quarterback is a lottery. And I think that teams are always glass half full on their quarterbacks, right? Unless it's just a complete disaster and they have to move on or cut the guy or whatever, right? You know, Trubisky is closer to that bucket than the automatic extension bucket, right? And what I'll say about the Goff contract is I was talking to the Rams in January of the Super Bowl year, and Jared Goff had just become eligible for an extension, I think, on New Year's Eve that year. And, he's starting a Super Bowl, and it seems like the right thing to do. And it seems like it would be incredibly aggressive to not talk extension with Jared Goff. And what I'm saying is that I think there's probably some GMs in some sports who would do that. What I'm saying is, in football, nobody wants to be first. Nobody wants to be first.
Exactly.
Because your job is on the line as soon as you do it. And so it's easier said than done. I think, I cannot applaud Barnwell more loudly than I am now for basically calling this and saying this is what they should do. I'm just saying that every team I've ever heard who's thought about doing this has backed off as soon as it becomes realistic.
I think you're right. The best analog for this to me is the Cardinals drafting Kyler Murray. That's another example. You know, they draft Josh Rosen 10th, and then they take Kyler Murray the next year. And that's another example of just, that's never been done. No one had just punted on a quarterback 1 year later. And if you're going to do it, well, you better be right, because you're probably not going to get another job in that position if you screw it up. But then they punt on Kyler Murray. They punt on Josh Rosen. And now other teams can point to the precedent of, well, the Cardinals did it and it worked. So now more teams have the option. It's the same thing here. I think that, to come back to your original question of, will this change things? Yes, because there's a precedent now where there wasn't one, because Stafford's better than Goff. So unless he loses his talent like a Space Jam, there'll be a better team, and then other teams will point to it.
Danny Kelly, is there a trade right now that we know where Stafford is going and the Rams are settled at quarterback, the Lions are settled at quarterback, all that stuff? Is there a quarterback and team matchup marriage that you want to see?
Ooh, that's a good question. I still really am curious what is going to happen with Deshaun Watson. There, you know, this is one of those situations where you have to look at teams that are able to make the trade for Watson nowadays. Now, especially with the context of how much the Stafford trade was. Obviously, there is the Goff contract situation too, but it feels to me like, you know, three first rounders is the minimum that you would ask, that you'd need to get rid of Watson. And so, you know, maybe that means the Jets are like, you have to wonder if the Jets are now the team kind of like the big stack. They have the most leverage. They have the ability to get other people out of the bidding just because they have more to use. And so I don't know. I don't necessarily want to see Watson on the Jets, but they seem well positioned to do that if they do want to go that route. I was going to ask you guys this. Why does it seem like all these huge blockbuster trades only happen in the NFC West now? Like, does this mean the 49ers have to be the team that go and get Watson? It's like an arms race.
I mean, it seems to set the bar. By the way, John McClain, who covers the Texans, does a great job, reported that the Rams-Lions trade will have nothing to do with the Watson trade if the Texans do it. And McClain basically said the Texans will probably play this out as long as they can.
Right.
McClain reports that the Texans will want 2 ones, 2 twos, and 2 young defensive starters at the least.
Wow.
So yeah. McClain said start with the Jets. So we'll see where that goes. But I also think that there's a long way to go there. And I don't think a Deshaun Watson trade is imminent. All right. So Danny Heifetz, any other big picture thoughts before we get to the Super Bowl on this trade and what it means?
Well, I think to go back to the Deshaun thing for a second, I think it has to be the Jets because the amount of teams with the list of things you just said who would be willing to give it up, I think is small. And I think that it's the Dolphins and the Jets. And quite frankly, I can't imagine the Texans sending Deshaun to the Dolphins to get their fucking pick back. Sorry to curse, but that one counts. Like the Watts trading away Deshaun to get the picks you got back for the left tackle you traded to protect Deshaun is just the optics are too bad. You can't win that deal no matter what. I think it'll make them look even dumber. So the Jets are the only one left. I really think sending them to Miami would be astounding. But the big picture thoughts is I really just think that this trade got me excited for 2021. You know, it's cool to see starting quarterbacks in new teams. I'm excited to see Stafford and McVay. I'm excited to see Jared Goff either revenge tour or kind of suck in Detroit. I think that it just kind of got me excited already before the season's
what
even
do you
over.
Think it's gonna be?
I won't tell you which one I'm favoring, but it's definitely not a revenge tour. I'm in agreement with you. I'm excited about this because this is they in theory solve each other's problems, which is McVay was held back by a mediocre quarterback and Stafford was held back by a mediocre franchise, and we don't have that anymore, and there's no more excuses, and we're about to see if they are the people that we think they are.
I don't want to step on Warren Sharp's toes, but I foresee a lot of underbetting on Jared Goff totals in 2021.
Yes, I'm in agreement with that. Although, you know, listen, I think that Dan Campbell will be interesting to watch. I think that's the word in his first year.
Jared Goff, week one, blood all over his teeth, biting the kneecaps of opposing defenders. Yep. We didn't know he had it in him.
All right, let's talk about the Super Bowl here for a second and get off bloody kneecaps. Hopefully off of bloody kneecaps. You never know what's going to happen in the Super Bowl. This is supposed to be the Super Bowl preview pod. It became the Stafford trade pod instead. Danny Kelly, if you're identifying things to look for this week, big picture, you start where?
Yeah. The first thing that I want to know is, are the Chiefs going to fall behind again early on in this game? And how is that going to dictate the flavor of game that we're looking at here? Whether, you know, because like on one hand, I am confident in the Chiefs. I'm confident in Mahomes. I'm confident in that offense and, you know, Andy Reid having 2 weeks to prepare, come out swinging. But at the same time, we've seen it so many times in a row now where they kind of get off to these like a little bit slow starts. So, and then have to kind of, you know, not claw their way out because they have eliminated these leads very easily in almost every case. But I'm just curious to see how this game starts out. I think the first quarter more than ever is going to be an interesting one in the Super Bowl because I think it could, dictate how the rest of this game goes. So how do the Chiefs play early on is the first thing I'm looking at.
Yes. Danny Heifetz, you think it's going to happen again? Chiefs fall behind early?
No, I think they're focused. I think that if your game plan is to hope that you
they're
fall
focused.
Behind, yeah, no.
Oh, they weren't paying attention. Oh, they were. Yeah. We have a game again. Is that how they approached the last time swaps? 18 weeks?
But no, I think the key to this game, the more I look into it, I think just how do they cover Travis Kelce? You know, the first times these teams played, Tyreek Hill had 203 yards in the first quarter. I know that's not going to happen, but I kind of love just thinking he was on pace for 812 yards or whatever in the game. It's just, so I think that obviously the Bucs aren't going to try the whole covering Tyreek Hill one-on-one thing again. They're just, that's not going to happen. So I just, but that means that the key is they're going to have to be able to match up with Travis Kelce. And Travis Kelce, we call him a tight end. He's the league's biggest slot receiver. So it's, you know, like every classic tight end. It's like, oh, well, he's too big to for a defensive back to guard, but he's too fast for a linebacker to cover. The difference is Kelsey's actually like that. And if you can't cover him for 70 snaps, who do you match up with Travis Kelce? That's how he almost led the league in receiving this year. I think the Bucs are interesting because they have two of the fastest linebackers in the league, Devin White, Levante David, and they have pretty physical defensive backs throughout that secondary. And I'm almost wondering if they put Carlton Davis, who gave up said 203 yards in that first quarter on Tyreek Hill. I actually think he'd be better against Travis Kelce in this game. So I think that whatever the Bucs do, whether fast linebackers or physical defensive backs, how they approach Kelce will be that, you know, the Chiefs, it's how much of it is you pick your poison. I think that how they pick the poison against Travis Kelce will unfold all of the Chiefs' options going forward. I think that that's really the whole game.
To that end, DK, is there someone on the Bucs defense that you think we should be talking about more in this matchup against the Chiefs offense in which basically every blade of grass needs to be defended? Where do you start when we're talking about the Bucs defense?
Do we know for sure if Antoine Winfield is going to play or not?
I don't think
we've seen anything. That's big, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the first thing that came to my mind is if he can play, he was such a big impact player throughout the season. He missed the championship game, obviously, with an injury. So if he can play, that's going to be a big, big boost for them. But I go back to what Heifetz mentioned with the linebacker group, man. I just think, you know, if any team feels on paper built to stop a guy like Kelce, it is this Buccaneers team because they have two of the most versatile, fastest linebackers in the game. Levante David has been all pro like every year, and he's one of the most underrated players in the NFL. I feel like he's just so good every single year, and yet we don't really talk about him all that much. Devin White, you know, top 10 pick or whatever he was, he's just explosive, flies around, makes so many plays in the middle of the field. So they have that second level, you know, those two guys that can just kind of shut down the second level. So I think that's going to be such an interesting chess match to watch, you know, from just like a schematic point of view. I think the Chiefs can beat you in so many different ways that it might not matter, and that's why I'm confident in the Chiefs. That's why I'm picking the Chiefs. But I think that's going to be a big matchup to watch, is how that intermediate passing game goes with those guys kind of ranging around.
You want a Levante David stat?
Yeah.
Here are the players who had 1,000 tackles, 20 sacks, and 10 interceptions in their first 8 seasons. Ray Lewis and Levante David.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
That is the list. He's literally, like, all these players get most underrated player. Levante David is actually the most underrated player in football. He actually is, because he's been good for, like, 7 years. He was on, like, a Grantland underrated players list, like, 6 years ago.
Yeah. He's awesome. David is the personification of football instincts. The dude just knows where the play is going to go every time. It's almost like Keekly-esque. In the sense that he's just always on top of it. He's not like especially big or especially explosive necessarily as an athlete. Like, he's a good athlete, but he's not special athlete. He just has instincts like crazy. He always knows where the play is going to be. So I love Levante David. Going back to, you know, his early days, I always thought he was going to be much better than people thought. And he's on track to be a future Hall of Famer.
Kevin, can I ask you a question?
Well, I just want to say briefly that I've talked about this a couple weeks ago with Jeremy Fowler on this podcast, but Levante David played against my high school in the state championship game in 2007, and it did not go that well for old Boone High School in Orlando.
That's interesting.
Danny Heifetz.
I was going to ask you, who always says, you know, obviously the narrative around Brady in the playoffs is you got to beat him in the four-man rush, and you've explained over and over that. Yeah. Anyone loses with a four-man rush.
Why didn't I think about that?
Exactly. It's like
when we're talking about Bryson DeChambeau, the golfer, and Mark Titus is so funny. He said, he was like, oh man, until Bryson DeChambeau started doing it, I never thought to hit the piss out of the golf ball. And it's like, yeah. It's like every time the Giants beat the Patriots, it would always be like, the Giants showed you the blueprint. Get home with four men. Oh, really? Because I'm pretty sure everybody's been trying that for all time since football was invented. But congratulations to the Giants for finally breaking through on that one.
It's so true. But the irony now is I feel like it's been flipped because now Brady's going against Mahomes. And I feel like that's the real key for the Bucs, other than what I said about covering Kelce, is can they get to Mahomes with a four-man rush? Because the Bucs, you know, they blitz a lot with Todd Bowles, but they have this defensive line that's really talented. Jason Pierre-Paul's playing great. Shaq Barrett's playing great. And the Chiefs' offensive line's really banged up. And the irony now to me is, will Brady cap this seventh Super Bowl because his defense getting a four-man rush? It would be kind of like a funny bow tie in the whole thing. Not a bow, just a bow, not a bow tie.
Yeah, that right. You just said it, though. That pass rush versus the offensive line, the banged-up offensive line, is really crucial, too. I can't believe we didn't mention that before. Because, yeah, that's just a huge handicap for the Chiefs is having those two offensive linemen out. How are they going to have to change things? Are they going to have to get the ball out much quicker? Are they going to lean on, like, you know, their running backs in the passing game a little bit more or whatever? That's another really good, you know, chess match type thing to watch early on.
All right, we're going to have a ton of Super Bowl coverage this week on this feed. A lot of good player interviews, just a lot of cool analysis. These guys will be on the Ringer Fantasy Football Show twice this week, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, Ringer Fantasy Football.
They're going to be hopping on with me to do some player interviews as well. It's going to be really fun. DK and I are interviewing a hot draft prospect on Wednesday.
Yeah, are we allowed to say it or is it a secret?
Let's not. I don't like to say anything until people are in the chair talking to us.
That's fair. It's
going to be worth watching. No competitive advantages. We got some good stuff coming this week, both in podcast form, video, and print. So go to theringer.com. Stick with us here on this audio feed and watch us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, wherever videos are. It's been the Ringer NFL Show on the Ringer Podcast Network.